Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 23rd, 2024. Marfa ISD School Board votes to continue four-day school week. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa schools will continue to operate on the alternative four-day schedule for the upcoming 2024-2025 school year. Trustees voted this week to keep the four-day schedule, which the district adopted this school year, but decided to switch days off to Mondays instead of Fridays. Interim Superintendent Arturo Alvarez said the move to Mondays off should alleviate some issues the district encountered this year, such as school being in session on federal holidays, which typically fall on Mondays. By being back on campus on Fridays, days the district traditionally holds pep rallies ahead of Friday night football games and other sporting events, it also hopes to reinvigorate school spirit, he said. School board members, a number of whom have kids in the district, expressed approval of having Mondays rather than Fridays off. When asked for her opinion about switching to Mondays off, Athletic Director Linda Ojeda said the day off doesn't matter as much as what is being reinforced at home. She said school staff and parents both need to do their part in encouraging kids to come to school. It's not necessarily what's happening here. It's what's not being trained outside of here, Ojeda said. District-wide attendance is 92% for this school year to date. School will start on August 12th. And the first 2 weeks will be full five-day weeks, Alvarez explained to trustees, to get students back in the routine of coming to school. Full five-day weeks will also occur before extended breaks for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and spring break. To be in compliance with the state, school districts must provide a minimum of 75,600 minutes of instruction every year. This year, the district met the minimum by having 149 instructional days and extending the school day by 30 minutes. Next year, it plans to increase instructional days to 157 days, equating to 80,070 minutes, a number closer to the minutes obtained by the traditional five-day week. The district will no longer be hosting Shorthorn Success Days on Fridays, which it used this year to provide additional one-on-one tutoring for certain students. By law, school districts are required to provide 30 hours of tutoring for all students who fail the STAR test. Board member Yolanda Morales Jurado, whose son is a junior at MISD, was concerned no more success days would mean less one-on-one instruction. One of the things that I really appreciated was the Shorthorn success days for the kids, and they were able to get the one-on-one attention and things like that, she said. How are we going to continue with that? Alvarez said the district will still comply with state law and bake additional tutoring into the school day, whether in the morning or during certain class periods, which MISD teachers okayed. The decision not to have Shorthorn success days was also partially a financial one, Alvarez said in a follow-up interview with the Big Bend Sentinel. Because Fridays were not a day school was formally in session with attendance taken, the district could not collect average daily attendance, ADA, money the district receives from the state based on attendance on those days. But the district was shelling out money to run buses, keep the lights on, and provide snacks on those days. The district is unable to provide free meals to students on days off due to state policy, Alvarez said. Alvarez told trustees, despite the issues, there is support for the four-day school week among staff, students, and some parents he talked to. But he also warned that the four-day week was coming under fire politically from the Commissioner of Education and Governor Greg Abbott and may no longer be allowed to continue the following year. The concept of the four-day school week is gaining popularity across the state, especially among understaffed rural districts, as a way to attract and retain teachers. When the school board first voted to adopt the alternative schedule in February 2023, it was also thought that it might help attract more families and combat the district's declining enrollment. At the start of the 2022-2023 school year, the district had 269 students enrolled. By the end of that year, enrollment had dropped to 233 students. Now, at the end of the 2023-2024 school year, the district has 213 students enrolled. Alvarez said families are continuing to move out of Marfa to seek other employment, and in the post-COVID era, many students are enrolling in online academies. "We're not growing as a school district," Alvarez said. "We're not getting an influx of families coming in with students." Questions about how the four-day week impacts students' educational outcomes and school attendance remain. Alvarez told the Sentinel more data still needed to be gathered to measure the effectiveness of the four-day week. "We have to see data. What we had this year compared to what we're about to have next year. Once we have that data, we can compare and actually see if a four-day week is something that Marfa can continue, or we go back to a five-day week," Alvarez said. He said the main reason for adopting the four-day week was teacher retention, and with the exception of the recent resignations of elementary principal Amy White and teacher and coach Edgar Ramirez, the district was well-staffed regarding teachers. With the shortage of teachers and administrators, schools started to adopt a four-day week just to retain educators in the district, Alvarez said. The other stuff with student achievement, student attendance, that came more into it as the year went on, but the whole purpose for this was to retain teachers. If you are a Marfa ISD parent or guardian interested in sharing your thoughts about the four-day school week, please reach out to reporter Mary Cantrell at mkcantrell at bigbensentinel.com. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Marfa Elementary Principal Amy White wields a water hose while the second grade class relishes in the school's annual splash day on Tuesday. White, who has been with the district for 15 years, tendered her resignation this week to pursue a position with Alpine ISD. Marfa ISD Elementary Principal Amy White resigns after 15 years with district and other district personnel news. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa ISD Elementary Principal Amy White tendered her resignation to Interim Superintendent Arturo Alvarez this week after 15 years with the school district. White served as a teacher and coach before becoming the elementary principal 8 years ago. The school board formally accepted White's resignation at a meeting on Monday. White will remain in the area, having accepted the position of high school counselor at Alpine ISD. She told the Big Bend Sentinel it was an extremely difficult decision, but one she made to advance her career. "It's been a tough decision, but I feel like this is an opportunity I can't pass up," White said. "Roles in this area don't open up very often." Alvarez said he was shocked to receive White's resignation, but he is thankful for the role she played in bringing him to Marfa ISD years ago, and he supports her decision to move on. "I am happy for her," Alvarez said. I told her that I would support her in any way, whether she's here with us or in another school district. School Board President Teresa Nunez said White's resignation is a loss for the district. I hate to see her leave. She's been part of our school community for a very long time with the coaching and teaching, and then she went into this leadership role, Nunez said. It's a bittersweet moment. With White gone, the district will need to find a replacement for not only the elementary principal position, but also the high school principal position, which has remained vacant since the resignation of Luann Porter last summer. Nunez said the district has received 3 applicants for the high school principal position, and it is possible one of those applicants could be recruited for the elementary principal position. Alvarez said the district hopes to hire a new high school principal within the next month and will post the elementary principal job soon. White, who will remain with the district until late June, was emotional while reflecting on her long tenure with Marfa ISD. She said she's had the meaningful experience of witnessing generations of students make their way through the local schools. Her ex-students have returned to work for the district as adults, and she's taught the children of her previous students. "It's like leaving a family, not a job," White said. "That's what makes it so hard." She said she will greatly miss the elementary school faculty and what they have built as a team. "It's tough to leave my teachers," White said. "Our building is a great place. We've worked together to make a safe place for our kids, a great learning environment." White said moving forward, she is eager to expand her skills by becoming a counselor and by working under Alpine ISD Superintendent Michelle Reinhardt, whom she admires as a leader. "I want to learn from such a great superintendent," White said. "I think learning from her for my future can only be beneficial." Other MISD personnel news. The school board also accepted the resignation of elementary teacher and head football coach Edgar Ramirez on Monday. Ramirez has been with the district for 6 years and is moving back to his hometown of Presidio for a new job in health services. This year, under Coach Ramirez's leadership, the Shorthorns experienced a winning football season for the first time since 2017 and earned a bi-district basketball championship for the first time since 2012. He also rejuvenated the cross-country and track programs, resulting in several state medals and qualifiers. Athletic Director Linda Ojeda said Ramirez cared tremendously for the young athletes he mentored and molded into strong competitors and helped set the precedent for a successful athletic program moving forward. "I'm proud of what Coach Ramirez has accomplished here as a Marfa ISD coach and as a member of our staff, but I am more proud of what he is doing now to benefit his family and hometown community," Ojeda said. The school board was also set to discuss the evaluation and contract of interim superintendent Arturo Alvarez on Monday. Nunez said the board voted to table the item until their June 3rd meeting. Alvarez, who did not have a principal or superintendent certification when he was hired by the district around a year ago, has been attending courses with the Region 18 Education Service Center to receive his superintendent certification from the state. Alvarez will have to complete the course, which he said ends in July, and pass a test before receiving his official certification. Marfa Police Department officers Ian Martinez and Arturo Alvarez Jr., who have each been splitting their time patrolling Marfa's streets and as school resource officers, are leaving their roles to pursue other career opportunities. The school district and Marfa PD partnered to hire a school resource officer, now a state requirement for every public school campus, in the summer of 2022, and are subsidizing the role with grant funds. In a recent city council meeting, Marfa Police Chief Gilberto Carrillo said he is working to recruit new officers to fill the department's vacancies. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Marfa Elementary Principal Amy White wields the water hose while the second grade class relishes in the school's annual splash day on Tuesday. White, who has been with the district for 15 years, tendered her resignation this week to pursue a position with Alpine ISD. Blackwell's school property transfer from Marfa ISD to National Park Service nears finish line. Marfa. The ownership transfer of the Blackwell School and its grounds from Marfa ISD to the National Park Service, a crucial final step required for the newly designated National Historic Site to become a reality, is nearly complete. The school district plans to hold a special meeting on June 3rd to hear from NPS staff and will, if all goes according to plan, finalize the transaction at its regular board meeting on June 24th. We feel very positive that the transfer of land will happen on June 24th, Marfa ISD Interim Superintendent Arturo Alvarez said. Talks between the District Parks Service and the Blackwell School Alliance and other entities regarding the ownership transfer have been underway since October 2022, when Blackwell School, a de facto segregated school that served Mexican-American students from 1909 to 1965, was officially designated as a National Historic Site. Before that hard-won milestone, the Alliance, a group formed in 2007 with the goal of preserving the building and creating a museum, leased the adobe structure from the school district for $1 a year. David Larson, superintendent of the Fort Davis National Historic Site, who is acting as a local liaison for Blackwell on behalf of NPS, said the ball is currently in the school district's court, with all other entities waiting on them to review and adopt documents. Right now, the school district, the board, needs to decide and vote on this transaction process, Larson said. The district plans to donate the deed to the property directly to the National Park Service and, in turn, the National Park Foundation, which raises money on behalf of the parks, will pay the district for the market value of the property in the form of a donation. Alvarez declined to provide an exact amount the district is expecting to receive, citing ongoing legal negotiations. The property, including the building and grounds, is valued at $237,720 as of 2024, according to the Presidio County Appraisal District. A handful of Blackwell advocates addressed MISD trustees at a meeting on Monday to urge them to finalize the ownership transfer and to question why the process has been so protracted. "I just wish y'all would get something done," said Marfa resident Don Shannon. Give Blackwell to the National Park Service like it needs to be. Sarah Martinez, granddaughter of Blackwell alum Lionel Leo Salgado, expressed to board members how important it was for her family to see the Blackwell School reopen as a National Historic Site and asked board members to keep in mind that time is running out for many alumni up in age. Anne-Marie Nafziger, who has lived across the street from the Blackwell School for over 20 years, said the site is an important resource addressing the history of racism and segregation in the community, and the step to finalize the property transfer needed to occur for the building's history to be preserved in perpetuity. "I just really encourage you all to, as swiftly as possible, make the transfer of land and do what needs to be done so that Blackwell can take the next step forward," Nafziger said. Martha Stafford, a community consultant with the National Parks Conservation Association and the Blackwell School Alliance, said the district owed it to their students, staff, and the entire community to push the property transfer through. "A large percentage of your students and your staff are Blackwell descendants, and they deserve to have their family stories preserved and shared by the National Park Service, Stafford said. Everything is in place to make this happen. I urge you not to let anything stand in the way of passing the resolution and signing the direct deed. In response to the cluster of Blackwell comments, School Board President Teresa Nunez and Board Member Yolanda Morales-Hurado said the board is in total support of the Blackwell School becoming a National Historic Site. They were just trying to wade through the complicated legal process of giving over the land. In a follow-up interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, Alvarez confirmed the district is still working with its lawyers to finalize the property transfer, a complex process involving inspections, appraisals, and more. But he is hopeful the finish line is near. For every box that we check off, it seems that another five appear, Alvarez said. That's been the delay. The city of Marfa is also involved with the transfer because it entered into a 25-year agreement with the district to lease Blackwell Park for $1 a year back in 2010. City Manager Mandy Roan said in order for the property transfer to happen, both the school and city will need to formally break the lease. She sent the lease amendment to the city's attorney, and they were not anticipating any major issues. Larson agreed that there are a lot of moving pieces, but the momentum to see the property transfer complete was building with the next steps already in place. The Park Service, across from the local to regional to national levels, is very excited about this park, Larson said. We're definitely preparing for that establishment and looking at having a ceremony to open up the park to the public and having leadership come down and do an event. We're also moving into some planning exercises with the public. President of the Blackwell School Alliance, Daniel Hernandez, said the organization's board is excited to reach an end to the property transfer negotiations. He said the group plans to stay involved with the community in the coming months as NPS continues its transition to take over the site. He said from the Alliance's establishment in 2007 to today has been a whirlwind journey made possible by the organization's founders, who recognized Blackwell as a special place in the country's Mexican-American history. To be here almost two decades later, now standing on a national park site, really magnifies the importance of the site and what it means in American history, Hernandez said. Local school districts gather for Big Bend Sector CBP Open House by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Last Thursday, kids from across the Big Bend traveled to Marfa for the Customs and Border Protection, CBP, Big Bend Sector's annual open house. The event is open to the whole community, but is a special field trip day for regional students. Age-appropriate dance hits, creative activities, and a chance to hop inside some of the agency's flashier vehicles make it a memorable day for all. For those interested in all things four-wheeled, Big Bend Sector lined up vans, trucks, and off-road vehicles, and the youngsters were invited to climb inside. By far the most popular vehicle was a helicopter. Dozens of kids waited in a line that snaked around the parking lot for a chance to check it out. Another popular tent hosted a demonstration of how CBP agents use drones in their day-to-day lives. The test drone, about the size and shape of a stingray, is used in fair weather to conduct surveillance operations around the region. Agents were also on hand to show off a mobile watchtower. There are two mobile watchtowers and 51 fixed watchtowers in the Big Bend sector. The Presidio Port of Entry also showed out in force, handing out stickers and coloring books aimed at teaching kids to educate their families about what agricultural items can and can't be brought back from Mexico. An exhibit dedicated to the agency's missing migrant program was more somber in tone, but carried an important message. CBP deploys emergency beacons throughout the desert, working with landowners to try to place them in some of the region's most remote reaches. Big Bend sector spokesperson Landon Hutchins was hopeful that the open house showed local kids career options they could pursue in their own backyard and shifted public perception about what CBP does to include rescue work and crime prevention. "Our primary mission is national security," he said. "We enforce our immigration laws, but we also work to stop the flow of dangerous narcotics and dangerous people." What has changed since Uvalde? A look at Texas versus federal gun safety measures. By Regan Stone. An impeached and desperate attorney general protects donors over children. Last week, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton sued the Biden administration over the new ATF rule changes announced in April, which would expand the definition of who needs a background check in private gun sales, along with clearly defining those sellers who will have to register as a licensed dealer. Paxton, looking to hand a rally cry to extreme far-right donors, has no legal standing in challenging the federal government in what is sure to be a costly battle for Texas taxpayers. The federal intervention will, plain and simply, keep families and children safe. As a matter of fact, one investigation by every town for gun safety found that 1 in 9 people who respond to online ads from unlicensed sellers would fail a background check. According to the Biden administration's fact sheet promoting the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act and subsequent ATF rule change, at least 3 mass shootings could have been prevented with universal background checks for unlicensed same-day gun sales. These include the Columbine High School shooting, where acquaintances purchased firearms for teenagers at a gun show, and the Midland-Odessa mass shooting, where the gunman previously tried to purchase a firearm from a sporting goods store but was turned down due to his mental health history, only to later purchase an AR-15 assault-style rifle from an unlicensed seller he met online. Time and time again, when state governments, like the Texas legislature, haven't acted in the public's best interest, the federal government intervenes and supersedes small-minded minority interests. We can compare and remember other examples that required federal action, like civil, women's, and LGBTQ rights, further promoting culture shifts. Far-right lies will cause children to die. Of course, Attorney General Ken Paxton and his buddies are going to lie to boost their camera spotlight. Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach recently said, "Under the new rule, if Ken Paxton and I were to trade guns, one of us would have to get an FFL, pay $200, and have the ATF issue a license." Stephanie Feldman, the director of the new National Office of Gun Violence Protection, set these guys straight, noting the rule change does not apply to people selling one gun that they've had for a while because they just don't want it anymore. And it's not that they're trying to earn a profit off it or trying to run a business. Nicole Golden, executive director of Texas Gun Sense, further expands. "The new ATF rule is safeguarding our children and families in public spaces from schools to malls and has the support of the vast majority of Texans." Golden referred to a Dallas Morning News UT Tyler poll showing 86% of Texas voters support strengthening background checks, recognizing that we must do more to keep guns out of the hands of individuals with documented violent histories. Uvalde School Shooting Second Anniversary and Gun Show, Loophole Dangers. These new rules on increasing background checks come in a time of increased mass shootings, but also confusion on what steps gun shows should be taking to stay within the law, as well as reduce their risk of arming the next mass or school shooter. In Far West Texas, Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson said he'd be happy to help a local gun show come into good faith with the new law, while also noting the Paxton suit created an injunction, therefore not requiring his services to perform background checks for a small fee. However, in a similar conversation, a local Lions Club representative, the organizer of the annual Big Bend Gun and Knife Show, was worried. He said if they required licensed dealers or background checks, they might lose vendors and attendees. The gun show is set for a Labor Day weekend. It's quite possible, as in past years, anyone will be able to walk in and buy an automatic weapon without any check on their criminal record. Even more disturbing, the event takes place on a school campus at the Student Auditorium of Sul Ross State University. Across Texas and the nation, the popular argument, "I might not be able to pass a background check," just doesn't pass muster when we know this basic 10-minute web search could stop child and family abusers, along with convicted felons, from obtaining a lethal war machine. In fact, Paxton's actions are especially despicable in light of the second anniversary of the tragic shooting in Uvalde, which took 21 lives, including 19 children, on May 24, 2022. Do you remember weeks later when Uvalde native Matthew McConaughey begged those in Washington to act because we knew the Texas legislature would do nothing? Well, you were right. For years, the NRA-backed conservative majority has passed deadly gun laws like an open carry law in 2021. This draconian measure, similar to defying background checks today, had grave concerns raised by law enforcement against them. Yet their grievances fell on deaf ears. Still, those in power in Texas will mourn the children that died 2 years ago while taking no action. Reagan Stone is an Alpine City Council member.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 16th. Donated splash pad tops council discussion Tuesday. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Although not on the agenda, a donated estimated $180,000 splash pad was the main topic of discussion during the regular city council meeting on Tuesday afternoon. Airport Advisory Board and Chamber Board member Vance Moore was on hand for the meeting to ask the council to reconsider installing the splash pad at Alberta Allen Park on the north side of town and suggested Pearson Park as a better location. The splash pad in question was originally purchased by the Grassland Estates HOA in Midland, but was denied approval to install because it was a conflict with their community swimming pool. Looking to donate the splash pad to another community in West Texas, Grassland reached out to Chamber of Commerce Director Teresa Burnett, and she was able to secure the donation. The Chamber Board accepted donation of the splash pad and in turn voted unanimously in late April to donate the splash pad to the city of Monahans. Quote, "During the chamber meeting, Rex Thee mentioned putting the splash pad at Duffy Park. At the following chamber meeting, there were a few board members that spoke outside of the meeting about the location of the splash pad, and Duffy Park was a terrible location." Quote, "On May 15th, I spoke with City Manager Rex Thee and Mayor Adam Steen to voice my concern of the north side location, because I had heard negative feedback from the public," Moore told the council. Moore said the meeting with Steen and Thee was good, and it was a positive environment, and Thee suggested Alberta Allen Park as a better location than Duffy Park. Quote, I voiced my concern of why I think Pearson Park would be a better location than Alberta Allen or Duffy Park. Thee told me more than likely he gets to make the decision on the location of the splash pad, and said if there is anyone in the community that wants to voice their opinion, he would either speak on the phone or they can meet in person to discuss the splash pad, and said he was open for discussion, Moore said. Moore was also told not to start a petition from the community and told it needed to be handled a better way. Quote, I do not have a petition to move the location from Allen Park to Pearson Park, but as a taxpaying citizen of Monahans, I am asking for everyone to look at the information I have provided to council members. I also would like you all to drive around the community and look at these locations yourself and listen to what our residents and taxpayers want, he said. Moore also asked the council members to put the splash pad location on the next meeting agenda to vote on it before it goes to annual budget. Camilla Blum also asked to address the council on the topic of the splash pad location, saying, quote, I grew up 50 feet from the railroad tracks, and safety for the kids is my main concern for the location of this splash pad. Growing up so close to the tracks, I know how many kids have run to try and beat the train crossing to tracks, and I know we would have the kids running back and forth across the tracks. Blum also brought up the 2019 school bond and the construction of the new elementary to keep the kids on the south side of town because of the train. Quote, if there was an emergency over there, it would be very difficult to get help to them, Blum added. Northside resident Ruby Garcia was the final resident to address the council on the subject, saying, the development of the area is not sufficient to support a splash pad for children. I love the north side of town, but when the location of the splash pad came to my attention, I just feel that side of town is not developed enough to have such a fun place for kids, Garcia said. Garcia has a 7-year-old daughter and said she would rather her go to a splash pad at a park on the south side of town. Quote, even though I live on the north side of town, Pearson would be a better location versus Duffy or Alberta Allen Parks, and not just for safety, but because of the train and the traffic backup when the train has the crossings blocked, Garcia said. Garcia added, I would love this on the north side if the area was a little bit more developed, but Pearson Park is an ultimate location for the splash pad. After the resident spoke, Thee spoke on the splash pad, saying, quote, just to be clear, the city of Monahans does not own a splash pad as of yet. It has not been donated, although that is the plan. I understand the concerns, but I only learned about the splash pad a few days before the transfer happened, end quote. With the splash pad not being property of the city of Monahans, the council has not had time to consider a location for the splash pad. Quote, this sounds like a great thing, and we are getting into our budget time, which is when we look at where and how we can get this splash pad put in. We do hope we can put it in a prime location, which will work best for the community if and when that time comes, Thee added. Thee added, quote, I think the best time to make the transfer of ownership will be during budget time in late summer, and this may be a good example of a time to put a community committee together who will study it and help make the location decision, end quote. No action was taken on the splash pad. In other business, the council issued certificates of election for Council Member District 1, Gerald Stava, District 4, Ivy Valenzuela, and District 5, Richard Hawkins, all of whom were up for re-election this year, but garnered no challengers, therefore the election was canceled. Council members will be sworn in during the next council meeting. In regular business, the council approved a resolution from the city code enforcement regarding 11 properties in violation of city code for either trash, weeds, items in the alleyway, and or dangerous structures. Quote, "This process is working. We started out with about 20 on the list, but several owners have complied since then, and the list is down to 10 now," they said. "The properties have all been given a first notice and did not comply, so this will allow code enforcement to follow up with a final notice and possibly move forward with court action if needed. Those reported to be still in violation are 603 South Doris, owned by George Hammond, 100 North Main, owned by Patriot Productions, LLC, 200 South Gale, owned by Patriot Productions, LLC, 509 West 15th Street, owned by Laura Salgado, 714 North Betty, owned by Andreas Ontiveros, 800 East 2nd, owned by Osmeda Freinas, 1405 South Doris, owned by Christian Sainz Aldez, 703 South Eva, owned by Ray Hardaway, 708 South Bruce, owned by Bobby W. Rogers, 1103 South Gary, owned by Esther Polanco, 201 East I Street, owned by Frederick and Sonia Nunn. Once a second notice is issued, the property owner has 10 days to comply, or the case could be turned over to Monahans Municipal Court for further action. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in the story, or any other topic, may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The next City Council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, May 28th, in the Council Chambers at City Hall, 112 West Allen Street. Early voting begins Monday for runoff election. Clayton Redman to square off for Commissioner 3 seat. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Early voting for a pair of runoff races will begin in Ward County on Monday, May 20th, at the Ward County Clerk's Office. Locally, Republican candidates for Ward County Commissioner Precinct 3, Billy Redman and Bill Clayton, will face off again. After longtime Commissioner Dexter Nichols announced he would not seek re-election, three candidates announced their intent for the seat: Robert Vasquez, Bill Clayton, and Billy Redman. On election day in March, after the ballots were counted, Clayton and Redman were separated by one vote, 251 to 250. Due to neither candidate having more than half of the votes, forced the runoff on May 28th. Redman and Clayton beat out fellow Republican candidate Robert Vasquez, who garnered 116 of the total 612 votes. The winner of the runoff will run unopposed in the November general election. Republican Tony Gonzalez will look to remain seated as the United States Representative for District 23 as he once again faces Brandon Herrera in the runoff election. The winner of the District 23 Republican runoff election will face Democrat Santos Limon in November. Early voting will run from May 20th through May 24th and will take place at the Ward County Clerk's Office, located inside the courthouse. Polls for early voting will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. daily. If anyone needs a ride to come in and vote on May 28th, the county will send a driver out to pick up voters and bring them to the courthouse to vote and then get them back home. The pickup and delivery service is only offered for Tuesday, May 28th. The number to call for questions or assistance is the county clerk's office at 943-3294. The Republican runoff election voting places have been consolidated only for the runoff election on May 28th. All voting precincts, with the exception of Grand Falls, will vote at the Ward County Event Center. This includes all of Monahans, Pyote, Wickett, and Barstow. School Board seeking to fill district vacancies. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. During a special meeting of the Monahans-Wickett-Pyote ISD School Board meeting held last Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. in the School Administration Building boardroom, a discussion ensued about the process to fill two open trustee seats. After a lengthy discussion concerning the way the school board has chosen replacements in the past versus posting a public notice of the two vacancies to allow the public the option of submitting their name for consideration as a MWP ISD school board trustee. The unexpired terms needing to be filled are Raymond Reyes in District 2 and Bobby Almanza in District 5. The board finally agreed to post the openings in the newspaper and on their website and social media platforms for a two-week period. Requirements to be considered for appointment are: have been a Texas citizen for at least 12 consecutive months, lived in the voting district for at least 6 months, and be a registered voter in Ward County. Anyone interested in becoming a MWP ISD school board member should go to the school administration office at 606 South Betty to pick up and fill out a verification form. The deadline to have the forms returned to Assistant Superintendent of Support Services Jeff Jones at the administration office is Wednesday, June 5th, by 4 p.m. If you are unsure of the district in which you reside, see maps of District 2 and 5 on page 4A, or call Ward County Tax Assessor Collector Vicki Heflin at 432-943-2546. As of publishing time, the news was unable to verify through the school district if anyone had turned in a verification form. MHS Wolfpack hosts Little Robo Lobo's STEAM Camp. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. The Monahans High School robotics team, the Wolfpack, will host and mentor younger students during a robotics summer STEAM, that is, Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, Mathematics camp for Parkway Elementary 6th graders, as well as Walker Junior High 7th and 8th graders. Robotics coach and teacher Michelle Hogan distributed 540 invitations to Parkway Elementary 6th graders and Walker Junior High 7th and 8th graders to give them the opportunity to learn robotics and become a Wolfpack member. The summer camp will be held on June 4th through 6th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the MHS campus in Mrs. Hogan's room 102. A $15 per student registration fee is required to be paid before the beginning of the camp. Quote, students will first learn the robotics code of conduct, which lists some of the basic behaviors mentors, coaches, volunteers, team members, affiliate partners, contractors, staff, and other participants should adhere to while participating in competitions and activities. They will also learn safety procedures that are in line with OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration guidelines, Hogan said. The Code of Conduct's number one rule is for all team members, no matter their job, to exhibit gracious professionalism at all times. Gracious professionalism is a way of doing things that encourages high-quality work, emphasizes the value of others, and respects individuals and the community. Team members are not to engage in any form of bullying, harassment, use of profane or insulting language, or any actual or threatened violence. They are supposed to report any infractions of the gracious professionalism rule or unsafe behavior practices to the event leaders. Quote, we will have 3 days to learn. On day one, students will design and build their own robot. Day two will be an introduction to Wolfpack competition and what it means to be part of the competition theme. Day three will be the art project day, Hogan said. Students will be exposed to robot construction, coding, design, wiring, and 3D printing, which is comprised of t-shirt designs, jewelry design, button design, as well as media, marketing presentations, and more. On day three, the students will be tested on what they have learned and allow them to apply for the robotics team for 2024-2025 school year. Quote, the entire robotics program operates under strict rules dealing with performing tasks under limited time frames and, in many cases, with limited resources. Teams of students are challenged to raise funds, design a team brand, hone teamwork skills, along with learning to build and program industrial-sized robots to play difficult field games against like-minded competitors. It's as close to real-world engineering as a student can get. Volunteer professional mentors lend their time and talents to guide each team. Each season ends with an exciting FIRST, which stands for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology Championship Competition, Hogan said. Hogan's robotics classes have developed growing interest among the students in the district. In the coming 2024-2025 school year, there will be Robotics 1 and Robotics 2 offered for the MHS students. The robotics team relies on donations in the form of personal donations and donations from businesses, which will be used to purchase needed tools, afford meals and hotels, snacks, team t-shirts, and robotic supplies that contribute to the Wolfpack team's ability to compete in district, regional, and state competitions. Contact the MHS office, Michelle Hogan, or MHS Principal Daniel Sharp for more information about the STEAM Summer Camp. Permit system to be set for Event Center Park events. Alamo letter plaque to be displayed at courthouse. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. During the Monday morning commissioners' regular meeting, the commissioners discussed and approved creating as well as setting up a permit system concerning the Ward County Event Center Park. Quote, all of our county facilities have permits rental in place for public utilization of the facility. Doing this takes some time to get rules and fees set. We have just now got to this point for the Event Center Park. We need to have a way to keep up with what is going on and who is at the facilities. When a large group of 100 people or more are involved, we can keep track of what's going on, Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. A few possible rules for the park were discussed, such as no motor vehicles on the sidewalks or grass, each event will be responsible for hauling off their own trash, no sand brought to the splash pad. The issue of stakes being used to anchor down canopies or bounce houses. The commissioners discussed what length stakes could be used to prevent damage to water lines when driven into the ground, as has happened in the past when extra long stakes have been used as anchors. The commissioners all voted by setting up a permit system for the WCEC Park, leaving the final rules and permit cost to be set at a future meeting. Holly added, Pablo Valles will be the person in charge of permit contact and issuing procedures. In other business, Chuck and Jeannie Reeves were on hand to explain and introduce the Alamo Letter Society project to the Commissioner's Court and how Ward County can become involved. The Reeves explained to the Commissioners that the project involves Colonel William B. Travis's 220-word-long victory or death letter written and dispatched to General Sam Houston, asking for reinforcements to defend the Alamo, which is replicated on a 2-foot by 3-foot, 203-pound bronze plaque. The goal of the Alamo Letter Society is to have the Travis Letter, which is synonymous with Texas's freedom and Constitution, displayed in all 254 Texas courthouses. Quote, "I think this is a very good thing for our county and for our courthouse," Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms said. The other commissioners and Judge Holly all agreed with Nelms. The commissioners agreed to the $4,500 cost of the historical plaque, which should be ready by fall of this year. In regular business, the commissioners approved paying the county bills, which include Ward County payroll in the amount of $418,000, county judge supplies for $134, facility superintendent supplies at $24, assistant district attorney salary totaling $100,000, district attorney discovery clerk salary for $50,000, senior citizens center repair and maintenance amounting to $5,000, golf course improvements totaling $985, and the Monahan's Library part-time cleaner at $4,300. In regular business for the meeting, the commissioners sailed through voting yes on the previous meeting minutes, county and hospital budget amendments, and approving the officers' reports. Present for the Monday morning meeting were Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and County Judge Greg Holly. The next regularly scheduled commissioners' meeting will be Monday, May 27th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County could call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioner's meeting.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.